No, I don't want to eat, Dawn. I'm not hungry. I just had breakfast. I'm Acadia Einstein, and this is Strangeful Things.
Wellness practically caused me to just get you destroyed.
Unsolved, unresolved, and super complicated.
Strangeful Things.
Wait a minute, you don't want to eat somebody named Dawn, or you don't want to eat comma Dawn? This is where punctuation is important.
I put in the pause. I put in the pause, you son of a bitch. All right. Welcome back to Strangeful Things, where we drill a hole into one of your teeth and insert a tiny microfilm that is fat-packed with entertainment. That's our new tagline.
I am here
with my fell companions, Jen and Melz and Chewy. How are you, Grackles? Are you having a marvelous week?
Aloha. Woo, it's been a full moon and it's been a time change and it's almost Friday the 13th, so I am wound tighter than a something in a butthole, I think it's the saying.
Oh.
Yes.
Is that right?
Something in a butthole?
It's probably not. Hold on. I'm wound.
I remember my Nana saying that.
Yeah, I'm wound tighter than a.
Can you open this jar of pickles for me? It's something in a butthole. Ah, yes, Nana. Certainly.
Okay.
I'll help you out. Well, this week I'm going to tell you a story about a man named Roland Owen, who checked into the Hotel President in Kansas City, Missouri on January 2nd, 1935. He was described as being as young as 20, and he was also described as being as old as 35. Oh. He had a cauliflower ear and a big scar on the left side of his head, the side the messed up ear was on.
All right, hold.
So he's a pretty noticeable dude.
Pause for clarification.
Mm-hmm.
What is a cauliflower ear? Does it actually look like a cauliflower?
It happens to wrestlers primarily, also boxers and rugby
because
players.
Because they get hit in the head a lot, or what?
Well, because they get in a lot of headlocks, and the cartilage of their ear swells up and becomes. If you Google it, and then you'll be grossed out. So
okay,
you got that going for you.
Wow.
Also of note is the fact that he checked in with no luggage. And according to all reports, he only had a hairbrush, toothpaste, and a comb. Now, I guess, I don't know how the fuck they knew. Like, was he just holding them? Or, like, juggling them on his way into the lobby? I don't know.
Did you say he had a mustache?
This is what I brought with me.
No, I don't know if he had a mustache, but if he had a hairbrush and a comb. No mustache. I saw a picture of him.
Oh,
no,
okay. Because I was thinking he could just have the comb hanging out of his mustache. There goes one of those items. Okay.
So, he said that he was from Los Angeles and he asked for an interior room on a high floor. And an interior room is one, like an interior cabin in a cruise ship full of coronavirus. It is one with no window to the outside.
Yikes.
So, I looked up the Hotel President in Kansas City. It's still there, and it's a pretty cool-looking building. Now, this guy Owen claimed that he had stayed at the Mühlebach Hotel the night before and was pissed about the price, so he moved. He was given room 1046 at the President, and the fact that he moved from that other hotel to the President is weird because apparently that Mühlebach Hotel is kind of famous because every president from Teddy Roosevelt to Ronald Reagan visited the Mühlebach Hotel, and now it is a Marriott. So
the more you know
for you. Yeah, the more you know. Now, this next series of events does a couple things. One, it shows how weird Roland Owen is. And two, it shows how much better hotel service used to be. But before we start, I have a couple questions. And we can answer them after I ask them both. First, have you ever been in an elevator that has an operator? And two, do you believe in numerology?
One, yes. Two, I neither believe nor don't believe.
One is no. Two is, I'm kind of like sandwich on this one. I neither disbelieve nor know if I believe in it quite. So
fair enough.
Okay.
I would say, yeah, I have been in a hotel that had an operator in New York City at some point. And no, I don't believe in numerology. I think it's hokum.
Well, the answer to the numerology question was no, you shouldn't, because it's utter fucking nonsense. And I put that in there because the room number is 1046, and while I was grocery shopping today, I was thinking of all sorts of numerology things to do with it, and I was like, you can just fucking make up anything when you're doing numerology. So, but the elevator thing will come up later. So, it was January 2nd. He checks into the room in the daytime, because apparently early check-in was fine back in 1935. And the maid comes in to clean the room while Owen is getting ready to go somewhere. She said that he acted very nervous and that the room was all dark with the shades drawn. And they kept talking about the shades being drawn, and then they kept talking about the interior room. So I'm not 100% sure whether they were just shades, like a window to the fucking random hallway, which would be creepy as shit. But I'm just going to say the shades were drawn because that's what it said in the research.
Okay.
So it was all dark, like he was a vampire. She didn't say he was a vampire. I did. So Vampire Roland said he was expecting a friend to come to the room, so could she leave the fucking door unlocked?
Did he say leave the fucking door unlocked, or did he say it nicely?
Well, he said it nicely.
Oh, okay.
But I'm marking that.
1930 speak, so he's like,
yeah, he would have said, hey, open, can see? You be a, hey, be a swell dog, name and leave the door open. Unlocked,
yeah,
see?
Yeah.
Be a tomato and leave the door open for
yeah. So I'm going to mark that as suspicious.
Okay.
So the maid came back later in the day with new towels, which was apparently a thing. Like, there was an afternoon towel check.
Oh,
fresh towels in case you took a lunchtime shower. I know. Hotels fucking ruled back then.
They should be warm all the time.
Right? Mm-hmm. So she saw Roland asleep on the bed. Again, the room was dark. And there was a note on the table that said, Dawn, I will be back in 15 minutes. Wait. So I'm calling that suspicious, too.
Yeah, who's this Don guy?
And this was all on the day he checked in. Maid cleaned the room while he was in it and brought a second set of towels. That's fucking living, as far as I'm concerned. I wouldn't have even had time to mess up the first towels.
Right, you'd find a way.
Especially since the first thing he did was take a fucking nap.
I do not believe that you wouldn't find a way to mess up about 10 towels in the span of 6 hours. True.
No toilet paper. What are you going to do? All right. So the maid goes to the room on January 3rd in the morning, and Roland was just sitting in the fucking dark, staring straight ahead.
At the pulled shades bricked window?
In the dark room, just staring into the room in a chair. Now, don't you guys, because I know I do, don't you leave when housekeeping comes? I don't want to see that.
Oh, yeah. I'm never around when they come.
No, I've got my do not disturb on. I don't even want them in there ever.
Yeah. No, yeah. I'm definitely not there when they come. No.
I'm like, yeah, there's an M&M wrapper in the bed. Stop fucking judging me. While she's there cleaning, the phone rings. And when Roland answers, he says the thing from the cold open. No, Dawn, I don't want to eat. I just had breakfast. So Don is pretty fucking clingy. He needs notes, and he's calling up about breakfast and everything like that. So I am marking that as suspicious.
Okay. You got a lot of why are you suspicious?
I am suspicious. So you'll find out why I'm so suspicious. So the maid went back again in the afternoon for the clean towel run. But this time, she heard two people in the room talking and the door was shut. She knocked and she said she had some sweet, sweet towels. But she said the other dude, or at least somebody that didn't sound like Roland, said they didn't need any.
Perhaps Don?
And then we come to January 4th. In the morning, the hotel operator, when not busy jamming plugs into holes on a big board and connecting people to Klondike 32 and Butterbean 9 and shit like that, noticed that the phone in room 1046 was off the hook. she asked, I don't know how, like, but she asked a bellboy to go up and ask Owen to hang that shit up. I guess they had not invented that a lot, that like, remember how?
Yeah, they only had like one line in the whole hotel and they had to unhook one to plug another one in.
Right.
Yeah, right. Oh, the trunk line's getting occupied by room 1046. Yeah. Get up there and take care of it, bellboy. So he went up and he said the do not disturb sign was on the door, which he promptly ignored and started knocking on the door.
I hate that.
Somebody said come in, but he couldn't because he didn't have a key. And he kept knocking and probably saying shit like, come on, Mac. And somebody in the room kept telling him to turn on the light.
What?
Suspicious. Now, this next thing that I imagine he said, I actually looked up 1930s slang, so this is authentic. Okay. Figuring the occupant was drunk, he just yelled at him to hang up the damn phone, you wet sock.
Wet sock?
Not a wet sock.
Oh, no, that is great.
That's a derogatory term from the 30s.
It's for...
Listen here, you wet sock. It means, you hang up that
like,
phone.
Alcoholic? Like a drunk?
No, he's just saying you're
annoying and uncomfortable.
Wet sock. You might give me fungus where my foot falls off.
I love
sock.
It. I want to bring it back. It's fantastic.
90 minutes after that, he had still not hung up the phone. So B or Flo or Ruth or whatever old timey name the operator had told another bellboy to go up there with a pass key and hang the shit up. So when he went up into the room, it was dark, of course, and Owen was laying on the bed naked, face down, ass up.
Oh, that's where we like to what?
I guess that's better than, you know, on his back.
Fair.
Says you.
He also figured Owen was drunk, so he just hung up the phone, which had been on the floor. Suspicious.
The phone was on the floor.
The phone was on the floor.
Yep.
He was. This is what I got out of that. He was butt naked on his tummy, ass up, scribble, scrabble, phones on the floor.
Yeah, that was it.
Okay.
The bellboy figured that he must be drunk, passed out on the bed, so he just hung up the phone, which had been on the floor.
Was he nude?
Oh, so he wasn't responding or anything? He was like asleep or passed out?
Yeah, he was asleep.
He's a wet sock.
He was laying there like a wet sock.
And he was nude, right?
Yep. Yep. We've established
naked,
that.
Naked right as there, a jaybird. Yeah, I'm just, yep. I'm trying. You've marked so many things suspicious that I started unmarking things suspicious.
This whole goddamn thing is suspicious.
Okay.
So, just to recap, he can't keep the phone on the hook. When the first bellboy came, he was saying, come in and turn on the lights when... The guy couldn't come in, and he could have turned on the lights himself. The next bellboy that came had a key and went in, and he was laying there on the bed naked, out of it, and the phone finally got hung up, so fucking B would shut up, and the operator and the switchboard could go back to normal. So
he couldn't turn the light on when the first one came because he was probably laying there ass up waiting for the guy to come in.
You might be right. And then he fell asleep. I'm bored of waiting.
He's like, oh, God, they're never coming in. I'm gonna
hope he
nap.
Didn't smother himself in a pillow. I mean.
Nope.
Okay.
He was just, there was nothing to indicate that he was in any danger at that point.
Okay.
So a few hours after that. The fucking phone was off the hook again, and they sent a bellboy up with a pass key, and he went into the dark-ass room and said, I'm sick of this room being so dark, and he turned on the lights. And there was Roland Owen, naked, but this time he was on the floor. The left side of his head had been so beaten up that his skull was fractured.
Oh my gosh.
His neck, his ankles, and wrists were all bound with cords.
Oh my God.
He'd been stabbed in the chest so many times one of his lungs was punctured.
Yeah.
And based on the bruises they found on his neck, it looks like he got strangled a little bit too.
Oh, wow. Anything else?
They did a number on him. They didn't electrocute him, did they?
So it's like, oh.
You gotta ask.
But this was 1935, so he was still alive. Yay!
What?
Stop it. He was alive?
Yep. He wasn't doing great. but he was still alive.
Oh,
so
my.
there was him laying on the floor, holding his head with his tied up hands and his fractured skull, and the bellboy, and a room that was covered with blood. The walls, the floors, the ceiling. It was even in the bathroom. There was fucking blood everywhere. So the bellboy called the cops and the doctor. And when they got there, they asked him who had done this. Nobody. I did it myself. I fell against the tub.
Fell on the knife so many times.
So then the cops, but now here's the, what? So obviously that's a lie because I don't think there's knives sticking out of bathtubs most of the time. And I don't think there's
been to this hotel, so
baby's first strangle hands bathtub.
It's an extra amenity. You pay extra for that.
But can I have the room with the knife tub?
Yeah. Oh yeah, honey, should we get that?
Here's the best part of this. The next question the cop asked him was, "Well, did you try to commit suicide?" And the guy was like, "No."
What?
I fell. So apparently, the cop's plan was, oh, maybe he just got a good run and start and jumped on a bunch of knives and smashed his head into the tub all at once, then tied himself out and crawled back out. Like, why would anyone ask that question?
What? Oh, my gosh.
Policing wasn't, you know, what it is today.
No, that's true.
I read a lot of these historical, like, crime books and short stories, and a lot of police deal with a lot of people who are on drugs and alcohol at the time. Dilaudin, I think, was one of the things where people would do, like, kind of nutsy things, and they would find people in the weirdest things. Like, all the time, cops were saying, well, I don't know about this guy. It looks like he might be a wet sock. and just blow it off when somebody is actually, there's a serial murderer on the loose.
Wow.
Or maybe cops were just super lazy. I don't know. Yeah, that's
probably a little from column A, a little from column B. So Roland Owen went into a coma and died in the hospital. And now they had a murder on their hands, a very suspicious murder. And here are some more suspicious things about the crime scene. Somebody had taken most of the shit out of the room. Roland's clothes were nowhere to be found. His hairbrush, toothpaste, and comb were gone.
What?
What?
Yep.
That's not the hotel amenities. You can't steal that shit.
That's all he had. He didn't have
anything
else.
They also took, like, hotel stuff. Like, the soap was stolen. The shampoo was stolen. Even the fresh towels that just kept coming.
Well, I can understand that.
They were gone.
Probably pretty bloody.
His key was gone.
Oh,
as a matter of fact, the only objects left in the room, according to the podcast, The Trail Went Cold, which was part of my research for this, the only thing that were left were a single unsmoked cigarette, a necktie label, a safety pin, a hairpin, and a small bottle of sulfuric acid.
This sounds like some BDSM gone bad.
Oh, I'm getting the same kind of thoughts on this. I'm going to tell you.
Why would that, then why would that be the stuff they leave? Why wouldn't that be what they take? Why would they take his comb and leave that stuff?
Sentimental value?
Yeah.
You know, maybe they were not wealthy and they just took things like, oh, I need a toothbrush.
Or
no, I need a toothbrush.
A
I don't need
trophy.
That one
trophy
lonely
from the
Lucy's.
Kill.
I don't need that Lucy cigarette, though. Nope, not me.
What if they left the cigarette because they knew he was still alive and they're like, here's your last cigarette?
Uh-huh.
They didn't leave him a match.
Yeah. Smoke it if you got it.
That's the last torture.
Oh. That he was left with no light for his cig?
Yep.
Oh,
no light
that's
for a cigarette.
A twilight zone right that's there.
Unless cool. he tried to light it with the acid. So,
you know, wait a minute. I saw a Saved by the Bell episode one time where it was a mystery type thing. And one of the clues was there was a cigarette left. Anyway.
Not at Bayside.
No, they took a trip up to somewhere. It was like one of the very few episodes that was not on campus.
Oh, great story, Mels. Okay. All right.
I don't know. It just made me think of that. That right. makes me wonder if they got it from this story. That's all.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm sure that the writing squad of Saved by the Bell delved into a lot of true crime to get their stories. So the cops also found four.
I know. What do you think they got horror story from?
The cops also found four bloody fingerprints on the telephone stand that they surmised belonged to a woman, but they never got a match. So now we got a weird crime scene to discuss.
Any forensics back then?
No, but at least they did have fingerprints. They could match them if they had a match, but I mean, they would just basically be going, well, here's our pile of fingerprint cards, Reggie. You can just start hold them up next to each other and I'll see you next year. As long as they were
arrested in this one station, we can match it.
Exactly.
But didn't they have your head looks pretty lumpy, so you must have done it?
Oh, phrenology? Yeah. I think that was still going too. Why, I went to the pier and I rode the merry-go-round and found out I'm a murderer.
Oh my God, stop.
Did any of you ever have, did like your Nana's house have a telephone stand in it?
Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No. What's a telephone stand?
It was a table that the telephone went on. It had a built-in seat and inside the table was where the phone book went.
Oh. No.
Right. That's exactly what my nanny had.
It was like as soon as they invented the phone, the furniture people were like, yes.
Yes, yes, a shelf.
A new thing that everyone has to buy.
Yeah.
So we'll put it right next to the giant radio. All right. So now I'm going to break things down into the witnesses because the cops obviously asked around at the hotel, but they also didn't know who the fuck Roland T. Owen was because the name was fake, as was the name he used at the previous hotel.
Really?
What?
Since he was dead, but they still needed to know who he was.
Oh my God.
They, of course, put his picture in the paper, but they also...
No.
They propped him up at the funeral home and encouraged people to swing by and see if they recognized him.
I would have done it. I would have just swung by just to say, you know what? Let's bring the kids.
And it's kind of like...
What was this, Weekend at Bernie's? I mean, come on.
Pretty much. It's like an Amber Alert, but it's like way more urgent and also way less urgent all at the same time.
I hope for the podcast you put up the picture they have on Wikipedia, which looks like an adult Eddie Munster.
Oh, yes. No, I gotta...
May I interject a quick fact about...
Yeah.
Back in these days, they used to have, they'd take your picture at your funeral.
Oh yeah,
you'd have a picture and you're a baby, and then they'd have this picture taken of you and all your family members posed around your dead body, your last pose. That would be a great crime sandwich. I would like to actually talk about that because it's super cool.
Yeah,
that's outstanding. Yeah. And in the middle, there'd be a picture of you just shrugging, going,
Wait, what are you going to do?
When you hit 40, you got to do your shrug picture. That way it'll fit all nice with your baby one and your death one.
It just seems like people were not as creeped out by death. It was just it seems like it was just everywhere. They would take, there was a photography industry built around taking pictures of dead people. But
sure, and people were throwing their garbage out the window and you could get an infection from the everything.
Everybody knew people who died back. It's not like today where, most people, God forbid, except for tragedy, live to be old.
Right.
You know, back then, chances were you probably lost a bunch of kids. In childbirth, you probably, everybody was surrounded by it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Uh-oh.
We won't have to worry about those old people for much longer.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, then it'll be us.
None of us are in the coronavirus age range yet right now, so we got to live it up while we can. Anyways.
Okay.
Remember when I asked about the elevator?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, the operator of the President Hotel elevator said that he brought a woman up to room 1026... And she apparently looked familiar in the way that sex workers look familiar if you run the elevator at a hotel that the sex worker comes to all the time.
Oh.
So, at any rate, she went right back down. She called him right back saying that the guy she was supposed to meet never showed. But she came back later that night with another dude to the 9th floor, and they left 15 minutes apart right around the time old Roland was getting tuned up. Because they guessed by the time they found the body, The blood had dried to the point where they thought it happened around 4 in the morning-ish. So now, a female guest checked into room 1048, right next door to our little vampire club, and she said that she heard male and female voices arguing most of the night. Whoa. And thought that there were two couples in there.
What?
She also heard what she thought was a scuffle and a gasp, but she didn't report it to the desk because that's super stressful. I mean, she didn't say that, but I'm not calling the desk.
Isn't that always how it goes?
I don't want to get involved.
When you read stuff from that era and people are like, there was a gasp. But how do you know? You can't hear a gasp. A gasp is this. But you got to be in the same room.
Yeah. Those people are being noisy.
Yeah, they didn't have the kind of building codes they do today.
No, I'm saying.
No, but everything was also naturally better because it was just like real. Oh, we found this teak wood we made the building out of just because that's how we do stuff.
Right.
True.
So, but I get the fact that, like, I've had many the conversation about, oh, well, I call the Chinese food, so you have to go complain about the noise.
Oh,
you,
yeah.
Like, go back further and further into the relationship where you had to interact with somebody to, yeah. like, give yourself credibility. So, now, 11 that night, a guy named Robert Lane was driving near the hotel and saw a guy who was wearing only a, quote, undershirt, who thought that Lane was driving a cab. So Lane gave the guy a ride to a taxi stand, which I think technically makes him the first Uber.
Whoa. And he said, but this man didn't have on any pants.
Yeah, that was that I was going
to
ask.
Okay, I had to get back. We got to rewind.
We're going to get to that.
I wouldn't let him put his ass crack and ball sack on my seats.
We're going to get to sack. It. Without, I promise.
Without getting paid like Uber. Come on now.
Yeah, but everything back then was made of leather, too, so he probably would have just slid right off. Plus, it was crazy fucking cold because it was January in Kansas City.
Oh, so that just kills all the butt germs. And
so Lane said that he noticed that the guy had a big scratch on his arm, and the dude remarked that he would, quote, kill the guy that gave it to him tomorrow. Now, because of this whole thing about the undershirt, I looked up the 1935 Sears catalog, and undershirts were not some special thing that covered your junk. All the ads sold the stuff in sets, and they all had the shirts tucked into the bottoms. I actually wasted a lot of time looking at the 1935 Sears catalog.
Well, the underwear was also pulled up past your belly button.
Well, at first I thought that Robert Lane had indeed let a cold-ass dude with his dick out into his car. But then I read another account in Mental Floss that said that he had pants on, so just in his undershirt implied that he didn't have a coat on or anything like that. So I wasted all my fucking time because he really wasn't Porky Pigging it like the first thing implied.
The first thing that came to my mind was he ain't got nothing but an undershirt on.
Yeah. Lane went to the funeral home and identified Roland Owen as his passenger based on the arm scratch. You'd think that he would have identified him based on the cauliflower ear and the giant scar on his head, but nope, it was the arm scratch. Few other people said they saw Roland with a couple dames at some hooch parlors, and a wrestling promoter from Little Rock, Arkansas said Roland had tried to sign up for some matches as a man named Cecil Warner. Remember the cauliflower ear?
Oh, yeah, that's
not,
right.
At least it was not Seymour Butts.
You're very focused on his ass, Mel.
Hey, yeah, you really.
Katie started it when he talked about how he was.
I'm just giving facts there, ass-tastic. It's not my fault.
Oh gosh.
Now he had stayed at the Muleback Hotel under the name Eugene Scott, which, as we mentioned earlier, was another made-up piece of shit name. Right. So while a bunch of people recognized him, nobody really knew who he was, which is kind of sad.
It is.
Based on this, anybody got any theories yet? Are things germinating?
Well, I'm thinking definitely, you know, the woman, maybe the guy was her pimp or something, and they were pissed that he stood her up.
Oh.
So they got on at the wrong floor, so as it wouldn't look like they were getting off on his floor, and then went up and smacked him around.
I like your thinking there.
Man, that's super seedy. I like that.
I watch a lot of Criminal Intent and Criminal Minds.
So now we move from an unsolved crime and an unidentified victim to a weirdo fucking conflagration of suspicious fuckery. Ready?
Ready.
So the cops, after a couple months, were like, we're never going to fucking find out who this guy is. So they put in the paper that they're going to bury him in Potter's Field on March 3rd when they put it in the paper. A woman called the paper and said arrangements would be made for a proper funeral. And them, being a newspaper, said, well, what happened to the guy? He got into a jam, she said, and hung up. That was all. Then the funeral home got a call from a dude who didn't give his name, who said, bury him in Memorial Park Cemetery. Then he will be near my sister. I will send some money. Then he went on to say that Roland had dicked over a girl that he, Roland, was going to marry, and that they all met up at the President Hotel. Cheaters usually get what's coming to them.
Oh.
Suspicious.
Suspicious.
Now, I also looked up, because that whole bury him in Memorial Park Cemetery implies either that the person lived near the cemetery or was in the cemetery. So I looked it up. And it's all surrounded by golf courses now. So I don't know what the fuck it was like in 1935, but I'm pretty sure that there probably weren't as many golf courses. I don't know. And sure enough, $25 was sent to the funeral home to cover the cost of his funeral.
Hmm.
That's been affected by inflation a bit.
13 roses were ordered and paid for. And the guy said, I'm doing this for my sister. I'll send you a $5 bill, special delivery. And they did get a $5 bill. And they also got a note that said, have the card say, love forever, Louise.
Hmm.
So.
All right, Louise.
But the only people that came to the funeral were the cops.
That was nice of them.
So we got fucking Don, who was obviously around. We've got whoever the hell Louise is. We've got a witness that says they heard a woman in the room. We know that there were at least two men in the room on one occasion, possibly more based on witnesses. But the thing is, he wasn't dead. Like, they didn't kill him.
Right.
Not right away. So that's fucking bugging me. The whole thing is suspicious.
Suspicious.
That's all I'm going to say. For the rest of the thing, I'm just going to repeat the word suspicious. Because,
but then he also told them when they, didn't you say, like, they asked him what happened and he told them that he'd done it to himself?
Yeah, he said he did it to himself. So who was he protecting?
And why? Yeah.
And why?
Yeah, at that point, you know, it can't get much worse for him.
Yeah, I know. And he took that to his grave.
Oh.
And obviously people knew the circumstances of what happened to him, and they were the ones paying for the funeral. So if they were the people that killed him, did they have, like, remorse, or were they just trolling, or what the fuck?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he was burying him near his sister? The guy was burying him near his sister, right?
The guy that called.
Right.
Said he'd be near my sister, not Roland's sister.
That would make me think there must be some sort of relationship or something there, because why the hell would you bury some dude
next to your sister?
Unless the sister was the gal that he jilted.
And she wasn't really dead?
Right. She was alive. Maybe she was Louise.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, he was just saying it wasn't a real dead lady, potentially.
No. I'm pretty confident that there was no dead person that was going to be, like, in the proximity. You know, they're going to get a nice plot next to fucking
next to whatever his name is later on in life.
Right. So, you would think that this is the end of it. But wrongo bongo. Because in November of 1936, a lady in Birmingham, Alabama, was reading an article about the mysterious case. Because roll this time. Became, you know, the mystery of room 1046 was quite a thing in the papers. She was reading an article about the mysterious case. The lady, one Ruby Ogletree, which is the old-timiest fucking name that I have heard until the end of this sentence.
I had a teacher named Miss Ogletree, believe it or not.
Well, of course you did. So she saw the photo of the dead guy and said that that looked just like her son Artemis Ogletree.
What?
Artemis. Ooh. Now that's a name.
Not Artie.
Artemis Ogletree had left to see the country in 1934. He said that he was supposed to go to California, but he either got there and then went back to Kansas City or never got to L.A. in the first place.
He was from Birmingham?
Yep.
How much more country is there than Alabama?
Deep South Georgia? Fair. Deep South
I meant, I think,
exactly.
To see the nation.
He went all the way to Kansas City. That must have been like years to get up there.
So now
he wanted to
this
get cultured, so he went over to Mississippi.
Artemis was only 17 years old when he was murdered.
When he was murdered? So,
yes. So what the fuck to the people that thought he was 35?
It's the cauliflower ear. That's what it was.
Yeah. Well, the family identified him by the big scar on his head, which they said came from an accident when he was a baby where he got some hot grease dumped on his head.
This is why people died so young.
To live back then. Exactly.
Come here, baby. Yeah, see how much hot grease you can take. I'm going to turn you into a candle.
The McDonald's coffee cup pet didn't get a warning label on it until the 80s, all right?
That's true. So they found out their kid was dead and he'd gone around the country being basically anyone except Artemis fucking Ogletree.
That makes me so sad that he died the way that he did, though. With his exposed derriere.
Yep. Well, that should be the end of it. Because now he's identified. But wait.
Dun, dun, dun.
There's more.
I can't wait to hear this.
See, the Ogletrees had gotten letters from Artemis. Letters that were sent after he was dead.
Oh my goodness.
Stop.
In the spring of 1935, they got two typed letters. Artemis couldn't type, by the way. From Artemis, saying that he was sailing for Europe, which is pretty fucking far from Los Angeles, so apparently, whatever, I'll just go to Europe, according to the letters.
Take me 6 years to get over there.
Via Kansas City.
Yeah.
And he had written regularly in longhand.
My ship has a connection in Kansas City.
Yes.
Sorry, Acadia.
It's the Northwest Passage. He had written letters to his family kind of all along in longhand, but these were typed.
Okay.
And they were postmarked from Chicago and New York City. And then in August of 1935, remember, he died in January. Ruby got a weird phone call from a dude named Jordan. And Jordan said, "I'm calling from Memphis. I'm friends with Artemis. Artemis saved my life in a bar fight in Egypt."
What?
But during the fight.
What?
Oh, no.
During the fight. This is
Egypt,
serious.
Egypt, Missouri?
No, Egypt, the country.
Egypt.
He saved his life in a bar fight in Egypt, but he got his thumb cut off during the fight, which is why he can't write you letters anymore.
Oh, my God.
Boy, stop. Hold on.
I thought you said they were being typed.
Well, no, this is what Jordan told him on the phone.
Oh.
He's got his thumb cut off.
He's got no thumb.
Hold on, I'm going to try to hold a pen without a thumb.
It ended on a high note because he said, "But don't worry, because he married a super rich lady in Cairo and he's fine." Gotta go.
That's when the mama knew for sure it wasn't true.
So, that's the end of that. That really is the end of that.
So
until
how do you type without thumbs?
What, just slower.
Well, yeah, because this
like what do you type with your thumb?
You
got another
still
thumb.
Write without a thumb.
Yeah, he's not typing on his phone.
I said you can write. You can actually write without a thumb. See if people
it's
do
hard,
it.
No, you cannot.
That's why you don't see chimps and apes writing a lot, because they don't have.
Don't question me. All right.
Literally, I guarantee you that no one can see the video right now, but I guarantee you that every single person on this podcast is holding a pen without their thumb now going, could I do this?
I can. I'm going to post a video of myself doing it. Here it is right here. You know what? I got it. So let's just pretend I'm smoking a ciggy. So I got it in between my two first fingers. I got it facing towards the paper. And my thumb is my thumb is tucked. And I'm writing.
I'm
using my pen the same way I would a kitchen knife, and I'm just kind of grasping the whole thing with all four fingers.
I'm using mine to,
you know, I'm drawing
jam
like
into
a
my
toddler.
Fucking.
Look at that! You can thumbs out like I'm hitchhiking, and I'm writing.
There it is.
That's I'm Proved using my pen wrong. To jam it into my fucking carotid artery because this is a radio show.
I thought Mel did a pretty good job painting
you.
A picture.
Thank
of,
you.
Of
just yes, call me is, Mel yes. Ross from now on, okay?
Yeah, that's all righty. So,
my happy pet.
Dr. John Horner from the Kansas City Library got a call in 2003 from someone asking about the case. Now, fuck, he didn't call the cops. I don't know. Like, if I find info on an old murder, the first place I call is the library. I don't know.
Hello, librarian? Yes.
Hello, fire station? I found a murder. So they said that they were cleaning out the life of somebody who died, and they found a box full of clippings about the case. And they said they found, quote, something which had been mentioned in the articles. But somehow during the course of the conversation, they never mentioned where they were or what the thing they found was, and they never called back.
What?
So, basically I told you this whole story so that we can all get mad and find those people and kick their asses.
What?
I know.
What in the hell?
We got Artemis Ogletree. Who I think, here's my theory, and you guys can blow it up.
Okay.
I think that he was in love with Louise and he was going to marry her, but he cheated on her with the dames at the hooch parlor and he got caught. And the brother, Don, went to tell him what for at the room and things got out of hand. And I guess they were poor and needed towels and soap, so they stole all this. I really haven't tied up
it's
that
all
loose
wrapped
end.
Wrapped up in a nice bow.
Just grab what you can. Let's get out of here, doll.
There's goal only was six to, items here. Right.
Their overall goal was to stab him and beat him and fracture his skull and strangle him just enough to teach him a lesson. But not to kill him.
Stop.
Yeah, that's.
Then they didn't expect him to die, which is why they felt bad and they did all the funeral stuff.
Yeah, but why would Artemis say, why would he say that he did it to himself?
He had to be scared of the people who did it. And would he be scared of Louise's brother necessarily?
He was protecting the woman he loved.
His sister?
No, it wasn't his sister.
Don's
he didn't
sister.
Have a sister.
We're assuming Don's sister
I'm
was Louise.
Talking
We're assuming
about,
Don's
that's
sister
what I'm
was
saying.
Louise.
When you said he loves a sister, you meant the other guy, not the brother.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking of.
What if it wasn't Louise he was in love with?
But Don.
But it was Don.
And what if she caught them together?
And then Don, having to prove that he wasn't gay, killed Artemis.
That's terrible. He was only...
Because, and then he didn't want to tell anybody what happened, because if they're having a relationship with the same sex, then that was really super duper taboo.
Oh, I know, yeah.
Well, I think it was actually illegal,
yes.
too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So nobody wins, as usual with all of our stories. Nobody wins, and we'll never find out what actually happened to Artemis Ogletree.
I feel so bad for Artemis. He's just a baby.
Yeah, I know. That weirded me out, the fact that he was only 17. Also, who lets their kid just go hitchhiking around the country when they're 16? I get it was 1935.
It's the olden
I mean, he probably
days.
Had like four kids.
Yeah, you could go serve in the war at 12 years yeah. old.
Yeah, they're like, he's Alabama 16. He already has
right,
two divorces
right.
under his belt.
You're working at the garment factory at 7. So, I mean, you know, 1935, 17 is like, you know, 2020, 35. That's why they thought he was older than he was.
Why? He was the governor.
He's so dumb.
So that was the story of Artemis Ogletree, who went around not telling anybody that his name was Artemis Ogletree.
I mean, I don't know how to feel about this. I'm gonna be honest, first time probably ever. But I just don't
You're
know
torn.
How.
Huh?
I'm telling you,
he had an alias for a reason.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, because his name was so nerdy.
No.
I mean, I know
he
there was
gone,
another reason besides
he could have gone by Artie
sucked.
Or Art. Yeah.
Back
yeah.
then, people's name were fucking Baskerville and shit, and still they'd be like Artemis Ogletree. Ah, let's give that guy a wedgie and a cauliflower ear.
Yikes! And like, what kind of life did this guy have that he had the huge scar and the cauliflower ear before he was even like 17? Like. That's stuff that happens over years. Well, not the scar, but the ear takes years of abuse for that to happen.
Well, sure. And also, what kind of guy has a cauliflower ear and a big scar on his head and has one gal that wants to marry him and has got other gals that want to cheat on him with?
Exactly. Yeah.
Like, for Christ's sakes, it was Kansas City, not like some town in the Old West with only two people. For fuck's sake.
Oh, my.
Look around, ladies. You don't need Artemis.
There were options.
Jesus Christ.
He was such a catch, he was worth killing.
Oh.
Yeah, I guess so.
He was an underage catch.
Yeah, well, yeah. Oh, yeah, what a catch he was. What do you got? Well, I got this comb and a brush and this toothpaste.
I can't even
so
buy liquor or cigarettes or nothing for you.
So of all the stuff that you have in the world, you have two things to do your hair with. And you
Wait
only have
minute.
Three things.
No, because he brushed the side. He brushed the side without the scar, and he combed the side with the scar. That's why he needed two things.
The brush is for flattening. The brush is for shining. The comb is for flattening.
Oh, I get it. Well, whatever it did, it worked. Well, right up until the time
Got
he was
killed.
Murdered. But before then, he was crushing it.
Man. Oh, gosh.
So... That's the story of Artemis Ogletree.
Why?
I guess
that's a bad for Artie. Oh, killing me.
If you wanna help us find out more about Artemis Ogletree, perhaps by inventing a time machine, you can go to patreon.com/strangeful and support us that way. But the easiest way to support us is just to rate and review on your podcast platform of choice, because that helps other people know that we exist.
Yeah,
want them to. If you join the Patreon, you can get into the secret Discord room. But if you just want to get into the regular Discord room, just follow me on Twitter. And also, if you follow me at Acadia on Twitter, then you can find another ad that I found in the Sears catalog, which was underwear for fat men.
Hook me up.
Fine gauge, soft, silky finish, made from finest Egyptian yarn, fancy collarette neck, pearl buttons, and ribbed cuffs. Full size and large. Sizes 44 to 52 chest measure. Retail value $1.
Ooh.
Price each 79 cents.
Fancy.
I bet skinny people only paid like a quarter.
But wait a minute.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm sure. If you see the picture of the guy, he's like, well, I've certainly gotten my money's worth from these garments.
May I please read that about the drawers? Okay. Okay.
Yes.
So Acadia read about the undershirts, but let's not forget about the men's extra size French ball brigand drawers.
What?
to match above, sizes 44 to 52, waist measure. Price per pair, 79 cents. Per dozen, $9.48. If by mail, 10 cents for postage. Wow. So these drawers cost the same as the undershirts?
You could get a dozen undershirts and long johns for $20. Why, that would last you like 8 years in 1935.
Hold on. Let's see. $20 in 1935 today. Let's calculate. What do we have here? Oh, my Lord. That is $376 today.
Wow, that's ball breaking.
Sweet Georgia Brown. All right. Well, I'm only buying one.
Wow.
Well, that's what you get for being fat in 1935. That's
you better right. be you rich.
You pay a premium.
It's a depression, so... You know, you'd have to be rich to be fat.
That's so. True.
That's true. And if you want your balls brigged, just go ahead and get these draws.
Well, you know what? You're just filthed out this week, Mel.
I don't know. I told you it was a full moon, and
you're all. But yeah, you were talking about the full moon the whole episode. All right. So follow Shuey at Shuey Time. Follow Mel's at Mel's Bells 84. Follow Sandwich at
The Jen Sandwich on Twitter. That's it. Just Twitter.
Yeah. So talk to us on Twitter, and I don't know. We'll talk back to you because we don't have a lot going on. And I guess that would be it for the whole show this week. Anybody got anything else cooking?
No, just peace, love, and love. I don't know. That was a stupid ending because I can't think of anything else.
Peace, love, and love.
All right. Well, I guess we're all going to say goodbye then in our regularly assigned order.
I don't know what that is. What is it?
Bye-bye.
See you later.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
All right. You've,
with love.
You've got a lot of...
Warmest regards.
You've got a lot of shit to fix with.
Warmest regards.
Right. Sincerely yours.
I want to redo mine to warm regards.
Now you made me feel like a jerk for doing one, so I'm going to just say bye.
Best.
Too late. All my love. Best. All my best.